Okie dokie, folks. Welcome to the Roots Report podcast, presented by Motif Magazine and sponsored by Rhode Island Blood Center, Mother Earth Wellness, Race Ale Brewing, Trinity Brewhouse, Ballet RI, and R1 Indoor Karting. I am your host, John Fusick. Today we have singer, songwriter, and actor Alicia Witt. She has had a four-decade career that began at the age of seven when she appeared in David Lynch's Dune. She has a new EP titled Witness and will be performing at City Winery in Boston on June 8th.
My history in your eyes, like a capsule saved in time. As life moves on, memory fades. The blessed distance on these days, I remain forever changed. You're the frame that holds this space for me. Will you be my witness? Held on when the mountains moved, you shared my sentence. Stood strong and you saw me through. God knows the only living proof. Call you to testify the truth. Never mind missing. Yeah, you're my witness. Now be your witness too. Pour your secrets into mine. You know I'll carry them with pride. There's a story they all know, and the one for us alone. Walked through the flames and still survived. Miles away, but side by side.
It's John. How are you?
Hey, I'm very well. How are you doing today?
All right. You just had a show on Facebook.
Yeah, literally just this second.
Yeah, you must have just finished.
I just finished this very second, and I asked them to put a little more time on the clock because it just was feeling so good. I was playing nothing but love songs because it's Valentine's Day after all.
That's true. It is. That was a good thing. Well, you write a lot of love songs. You kind of have that love kind of feel to a lot of your music.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear you say that. I think there was a period of time when I I was writing more breakup songs and songs of woe. Even when I play songs that are a little melancholy now, I think it's best to try to find the positive in them.
Yeah, I'm a songwriter as well, so I get it. I mean, I do the same thing. It's whatever, wherever your brain is at that period is what you're going to write.
That's right. And if you yourself are in a more positive place, if you're in the habit of seeing the bright side as opposed to the not so bright side, I think that's what's going to come out in your music. What kind of music do you write?
I'm a folk singer, folk pop, kind of acoustic, Americana, kind of wherever that genre lies. I don't know. I play acoustic guitar and sing.
Beautiful. I love that.
Oh, nice. Well, you play piano, and I'm very envious of that. Because I dabble in piano, but I just never... I mean, I wish I had learned when I was younger, but, you know, now it's just... I don't have the patience to sit and learn. I just kind of plunk on the keys, and that's it.
Well, I dabble in guitar, so I can relate, and I long to be better at it.
Well, you're kind of a virtuoso on the piano. You've been playing piano since you were, like, 5, haven't you?
Since I was 7, yes.
Oh, 7,
I started, okay. Sorry, I'm going to drop an ice cube into this. I'm just making myself an iced coffee. There we go. Now I won't be loud anymore.
No Dunkin' Donuts close by?
No, there's no Dunkin'. Now, I can ask you a question, though, since I know you are a fellow New Englander, and I can hear that familiar accent.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to ask. I believe my drummer totally made this up, but at the time I thought it was a thing. I think it's ridiculous in a good way. But a few years ago, I went on tour with a drummer named Lemmy. And Lemmy is a fan of Dunkin' Donuts. And, of course, our tour started that year in Boston. First thing we saw as soon as we got out of the gate was a Dunkin' Donuts. But Lemmy calls them Dudo.
I have never heard that.
I think he made that up.
I have never heard that. I've heard, you know, Duncan or DD or, you know, I've never heard that one before, though. You know, it might be a local, like, really localized thing.
Or maybe he just made it up and...
Maybe he's screwing with
it. And we're trying in vain to make it catch on.
Maybe, you never
Dudo.
Know.
Under the Dudo?
So you're originally from Worcester.
I am from Worcester.
And I'm sorry to hear about your parents. I remember seeing that on the news, and that was very sad. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, I appreciate that.
So how old were you when you left Worcester?
I left Worcester for good when I was 16, although I was already spending time elsewhere. I had kind of moved to L.A. the first time when I was 14.
Oh, wow.
To try it out, and then... grandparents had a rough time and they were not doing well. And I moved back with my mother. So I ended up spending time back there again, I think the year I was 15. And then 16 was the year I moved for good. And I lived in LA for 25 years until I moved to Nashville.
There used to be a lot of great, back in the early 90s, there were a lot of great places to play in Worcester. For folk music, there are quite a few places we used to play in Worcester. I haven't played in Worcester in quite a while now.
Yeah, when I mention Worcester to musicians here, I often hear people say, oh yeah, I know where Worcester is, I played there. Like around the same time frame you're talking about.
Yeah, it was a very, I actually used to, I don't know, if do you remember the Worcester Galleria?
Of course.
Yeah, there used to be a pinball arcade in there, and it was a chain. And back in the way early 80s, I worked I ran a pinball arcade in Rhode Island, but they were a chain, and occasionally I'd go up to the Worcester one and work too.
I was really big into Galaga. I did not go to the pinball arcade, but I did go to the Marriott Hotel that used to be there because they had a Galaga and a Ms. Pac-Man by the swimming pool. And on a special occasion, I would successfully cajole my dad into taking me there on the way home from a piano lesson. And I'm still a real ringer when it comes to Galaga, but it all stems from those early years on that Marriott Galligan machine.
I think I wanted to tell you, and you might think this is very weird, but back in 97, you were doing that show Sybil.
Yes.
That is pretty much, I mean, I know you were around before that, but this is when I kind of learned of your existence, when you played the character Zoe and Sybil, because I used to watch that program. Your character was a very precocious character, as I recall. And I had just gotten a puppy, and she was a very precocious puppy, and she was a redhead. I was looking for a name for her at the time, so I named her Zoe after your character.
Oh, really?
Yes. I mean, she's passed away since, she passed away about 10 years ago, but she was, I mean, I have her name tattooed on my wrist. And I know you're a dog person. I saw your dog. What kind of dog is yours?
My beloved Ernest, he's a Cocker Spaniel mix. We fought up until really recently when I did his dog DNA. I discovered that to my surprise, but we always thought he was a Beagle Min Pin mix. DNA says otherwise. He's got lots of stuff, lots of Super Mutt, which is a combination of lots of different breeds going back for generations, which is a beautiful thing.
I love mutts. Mutts are the best.
I've always only had mutts. I had two great big rescues in L.A., who were with me for a long time. And then I had a rescue cat who came right off the street, and she lived to be almost 20.
Wow. Yeah, I've had a few
of those,
too.
During the time I was working on Sybil. Yeah. She came with me frequently to the dressing room.
Cats kind of adopt you. They have a habit of doing that.
They do. They do. She seemed quite indignant a lot of the time.
Mm.
Like, what are we doing here?
I have one of those who's usually crawling on top of me while I'm doing the podcast, but I'm doing it in another room today, so she's sleeping in the other room.
Oh, that's the sweetest. Ernest is curled up on a chair. He just listened to my whole show.
That's great. I love that you're always putting pictures of him on your Facebook page. And it don't feel weird that I have you on Facebook, because what happened was, a couple of years ago, you were coming to Boston, and I was trying to get an interview with you then, so I clicked your like page on Facebook. And ever since then, your posts come up all the time, so I always see what you're up to. Kind of funny, though.
I really appreciate that. I don't think it's weird at all. And I'm always, as an independent musician, although I'm kind of on the normal circuit, I guess, as an actor, but as a musician, this has always been my passion project, and I'm self-promoted, so I'm just happy that my stuff is showing up in anybody's feed, because that's how people know that I'm doing gigs. And I would say in the last few years, it's really gotten exciting in that department. People are really turning out for the shows, and that's a great thing, because that allows me to feasibly block out chunks of time for touring and taking weekends off, like I am when I come to Boston and New York in June. And if there's an acting gig that should come up that conflicts with that, I'm just going to say, well, I've got other plans.
Oh, that's good. I mean, I noticed you don't do a lot of live shows. I mean, you do tour, but they're very select. You know, it's little surgical strikes in cities. You do go here, but it's not a big, long tour of, like, you know, 50 dates or something like that. You do, like, a few dates and every now and then. Because I've been watching, waiting for you to come back again to Boston. And this is the first time in a couple of years, I think, you've going to be in Boston.
Yes, that's true. You know, in 2021 and in 2019, I did month-long tours. And I'm definitely open to doing that again. But what I'm trying this year is the little in and out date are devised so that I would be able to do other things as they come up. I think it's going to be an interesting year, because I've got this movie, as you might know, that's coming out in July. And I do want to be able to go in to these dates. And if it's a Saturday or Sunday, even if I'm working on a movie, I should be able to finish on a Friday night and come on in on Saturday and still do the show. But I don't really know what the year is going to have in store. And I think rather than block out a month of time in 2024 for touring, it would probably be wise for me to leave those dates open for acting gigs.
Well, it makes sense. You're a very busy gal. I mean, you have, the thing that I learned about you is you're an extremely intelligent, extremely talented, and extremely versatile person, which keeps you working all the time, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's a blessing, and I don't take that lightly. A very big deal to be able to say that I've been a working artist now for 30 years.
Yes, I thought it was 40.
Well, if you count Dune, then yes.
Yeah, because I count Dune, because after I found out about you, I was like, oh yeah, I remember. She was that creepy girl in Dune. Oh my gosh, that was such a great role, but it was creepy. That was a creepy little character you played.
Yes. Oh, I like playing those roles that are a little left of center. I certainly do.
Yeah, that was.
But to clarify that, I would say I've had a 4-decade acting career, but I was certainly not making a living when I was 7, and I wasn't a child actor. I didn't have an agent. I wasn't going to auditions or anything like that. And I still was living in Worcester, focusing much more on piano competitions and lessons, and thinking at that point that it was possible I might have a career as a classical pianist. But in the back of my mind, I knew that I loved acting more than really anything I could have thought of at that time. So I started begging to be able to spend more time in LA when I was really, I think, around 9 or 10. But it wasn't until Sybil, the show you mentioned earlier, that I was making a living at it. Even though I had some other jobs before Sybil, they didn't pay really anything, as they don't when you're starting out. You're just grateful to have anything that's going to put you out in front of people and give you a chance at having a career. But I was making a living playing piano.
I read that. You were playing in a hotel. Well, I forget what the name of the hotel.
The Beverly Wilshire.
Beverly Wilshire, yes, that was what I...
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
That was my most steady gig. I played at the Beverly Wilshire for 2.5 years, and I wrote my 2 weeks notice letter after Sybil got picked up to go to series, because then I knew I was going to have enough money to support myself and put a little bit in the bank, and I felt secure. And I had some movies that were coming out, like Mr. Holland's Opus and Four Rooms. I was like, okay, I think not only can I not keep playing because I'll be working, but I was like, I can do this. Mm. And so from that point on, that was age 19. That's when I count myself as a working, well, I guess, if we're being technical, though, yeah. I was playing piano for a living before that, so I've always been a working artist.
David Lynch is the one who discovered you, wasn't it? Wasn't he the one that discovered you?
He's the director of Dune.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's the one who selected you for that role. He found you or saw you. Was it on TV or was it live? You did some competition.
It was the casting director, actually, who discovered me. But what happened was, and David is the one who made the decision, but she was having a hard time finding little kids who were able to play the role of Alia, because as you mentioned, she's a little creepy, but the reason why she's creepy is because her mother drank the water of life while she was pregnant with Alia. The water of life is not meant to be taken when you're pregnant, because it infuses a person with all of the knowledge of all of the reverend mothers for generations before. It kills some people, but if it doesn't kill you, then you become this superhuman, super wise person. And so little baby Alia was born as a reverend mother. So from the time she was born, she was able to speak, had all of these memories, and people thought she was an abomination and a freak because of it, but it really wasn't her fault. So the casting director, Jane Jenkins, was coming up empty finding a child who was supposed to be around the age of 4 for the scenes that Alia had when she was 4 years old and becomes a very pivotal character. And she called That's Incredible, the show that was on the air at the time, because they'd had a few kids on who could do incredible things, and she was wondering if maybe she would find somebody that way, and they sent her a VHS tape of my appearance, where I'd been doing a scene from Romeo and Juliet at the age of 5. And that was how she discovered me, called my parents out of the White Pages and sent us to New York for me to audition for her. And I auditioned for her, and then she had me stay to meet David Lynch. Nice. And auditioned for him, and that's how it happened.
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny that that movie came out, I don't know, was it like 40 years ago that came out? 40? Yeah, like 40 years ago that movie
came
out.
Yeah, just about.
And I remember your character, like, that's one of the sticking points in my memory of that character in that film. And I've only seen that movie once, maybe, and that's, I don't think I've ever seen it again. It's just that one time, because that's back when things were on television and you couldn't see it again. Now, like, there's a new Dune that came out, and I can't tell you who played the character that you played in the original film, because they didn't make it as an impression as your character did. Your character made more of an impression on me than the character in the current Dune has made. That just didn't stick with me. It just didn't. It didn't. I don't think it hit home like your portrayal of that character did.
Well, I'm glad mine made an impression, and I can't wait to see. I actually need to see both movies. It's weird that I haven't seen them yet. I haven't even seen the original one. I kind of keep waiting for a special occasion to watch it with somebody that will understand what it means to me. But what I know from just having seen the trailer is it appears to me in many ways to be an homage to the original.
It is. It seems like it leans more towards a Star Wars feel than the original film that David Lynch did. I think, I don't know. I never read the book, so I can't make an informed decision or criticism of them. But I just think that the original film sticks with me more than the one that is out currently. That's my opinion, but that's, you know, I'm not Siskel and Ebert or whatever.
Well, that's all right. I mean, it's all about how people view the movies at the end of the day. It's not, the critics can only go so far, and it's just like music. Music is so subjective. It doesn't mean one is better than the other. It's just what resonates with you.
True. So one of the things I see about you on your Facebook page, especially during the early spring and summer, is you're big on your garden. You like to garden.
Oh, yes, sir. I love to garden. You haven't seen this yet because I've yet to post, but my newest science project is brewing in the basement at the moment. I decided to...
Do you have a still in your basement?
Well, no, not a still. Although I did try my hand at kombucha back when I lived in LA for a while. And that took off. I had kombucha all over my kitchen, and that just didn't last very long. And plus, I think it was moonshine. It was not the right formula. Anyhow, no, what I've got going on in my basement is... I bought these little kits with grow lights and tiny proper seed starter packs. Oh. I mean, it's just the packs. It's like probably about 50 or 60 of the little cells mm-hmm. per pack. Wow. And these grow lights that are really bright, and you put them over them, give them some water every day. I've got three of them going, three of these little cells, and I've started all of my crops that will ideally be planted in mid-March, the ones that won't die if they get a little frost, like broccoli, cilantro, cauliflower. What else did I start? I put in other brassicas like Swiss chard, kale, a few other herbs as well. And these things, I'm hopefully going to get a jump start out there. And I'm seeing this as a blessing because I was supposed to start filming a movie this month, and that's been pushed by a little bit. So it allows me to be home for this crucial pre-spring window where I can get all this stuff going. And then when it's time to plant, instead of putting the seeds out there, I'm going to put the actual seedlings.
Oh, that's good.
Stuff like broccoli isn't happy when it gets hot, and it gets plenty hot here in Nashville.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've only been down to Nashville a few times, but it's usually during the cooler months that I've been down there.
Yes, even though it's still freezing out, I've begun my spring garden inside.
Well, that's a good thing. So one of the things I've seen you promote is your Casio keyboard that you seem to be very proud of.
Yes.
What?
That's right.
That's some new model. They sent that to you, didn't you?
Yes. Yes. The beautiful thing about my relationship with Casio is how organically it's come about. I'm somebody that is very allergic to when I see people posting about stuff because they're being compensated to do so. And so I've never made a post where I'm just posting what I was told to say because I'm getting a paycheck for it. For that reason, when I first discovered that Casio was making these lightweight, very piano-like feeling and sounding keyboards, I started playing them. I started using them at gigs, and Casio started taking notice of that. So they got in touch with me. They offered to send me their latest model this is like 5 years ago or so, or 6 years ago even. And then they started offering to send a Casio for me to use when I played at a venue that didn't have one, or that didn't have a piano or a keyboard. So I would have to bring one in myself. And it was only in 2022 when they launched the PXS 7000 that they reached out and they asked me to officially be one of their brand ambassadors.
Nice.
And I just feel so honored that now that we do have an official relationship, it's something that's built up so naturally, and I know the company so well. Another really important thing to me, if I'm going to be talking about a brand in public, is I want to know that the customer service and the people behind the brand are quality and dependable and really treat the customers like they deserve to be treated. And my experience with Casio for all of those years before I had any sort of relationship like I do now, that just showed me so much about who they really are. The tone of this one is fantastic, along with the feel that I'm used to with a Casio. But as somebody who would always prefer to play a real grand piano, I'd say this is easily the next best thing. One of the things that's different about this one is that they have so many piano tones within the one keyboard. It's not just one grand piano sound like a lot of keyboards have.
I checked it out when I saw that you were playing it, because I always like to look at keyboards. I mean, I have a cheap, you know, lower end Casio that I use as a practice, but I have a Roland VK8. That's my performance keyboard that I use in a band. I just play like organ and stuff, nothing fancy, but it's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
The things are so heavy and they're bulky, and you know, I'm always looking for something that's affordable, that's lightweight, and has great sounds. So, you know, eventually, I mean, I looked into that one. That one looked nice. It's nice to find something that is, especially, that has great sound and is lightweight. Those are the important things, I think, these days. So, I mean, the feel, too. I mean, the weighted keys that have that weighted key feel is a nice thing, too.
Yeah, it leaves me feeling satisfied when I play it. I also love that this model comes with a stand that's a piece of furniture and a pedal throne that's connected to the stand, so you don't have to worry about the pedal drifting away from you, or as I've had happened before on other keyboards, I'll play really forcefully and the keyboard starts shifting on the stand.
Oh.
Or it's wobbling a bit. This is all one solid piece, so the keyboard is fastened into it, and it only takes maybe 6 minutes to take apart. So it's pretty great if you can't have a live piano.
In recent months, I mean, I don't know how recent, the but you put out an EP called Witness that you've been promoting, and that's a six-song EP, right?
Yes.
Okay. I did watch the video for Witness. Nice. I liked it. It was nice stuff.
Thank you.
That CD tends to be more of the love songs, the piano-driven love songs.
I've lived the movie moments, kisses in the rain. Been flown across an ocean, first class ticket, free champagne. Had all night conversations, sharing dreams in destinations I never thought I'd see. But where's that gotten me? Is there something I keep missing? 'Cause it all ends up the same. Or maybe I just don't know what it takes. In a city full of music, never thought it'd take so long for someone to write me a song. One of those songs that grabs your heart and won't let go. One of the songs where you're falling fast and dancing slow. Where the moment lives forever in a three-chord memory. Every word sounds so familiar, only I know what it means. Song I can't hold on to when the sky is turning gray. A song I'll sing along to when the music starts to fade. I want someone to write me a song.
Then I listened to some of your older stuff, and it had more of a pop sound with there was a lot more stuff going on in it that was more produced. There was a song that
you might be thinking of 15,000 Days.
Is that the one that Consolation Prize is on?
No, that was Ben Folds produced.
Oh, okay.
That was Revisionary History, and that's going back a few years.
Oh, okay. I really like that song.
Thank you. I love that song, too.
That's cool that you had a relationship. Well, you still have a relationship with Ben Folds, right?
I haven't talked to him in a while, but, I mean, I still have his info. I could.
Well, you worked together. I mean, you did. Didn't you do shows together or something?
Yeah, we did. We did. I opened for him at a number of different locations, and we recorded some music together as well. We did a duet that we wrote for the end credits of a movie that I acted in, which ended up being called Cold Turkey when it was released. He recorded a song that I had written as well, that we wrote together, I mean, but he recorded on his own album a song called I'm Not the Man.
Didn't you do the music for a Hallmark movie, too, that you were in?
Yes, I wrote a song specifically for it. That one was Christmas Tree Lane. That was the last one that I made for Hallmark, which was 2020. I had produced that film as well and written the story for it.
Oh, nice.
So I wrote the song, and that was different and beautiful experience because it was not only obviously used in the movie, but it was used on screen in the movie. The beautiful challenge of it was to create something that would hopefully have resonance away from the movie, but every word of it would feel like something that character would have written specifically about the love story she was experiencing and all of the memories that she was trying to save from her town.
My mother's a big Hallmark movie fan. She puts the Hallmark channel on and she watches Christmas movies year round.
That's a beautiful thing. Well, please tell her I said hi, or I guess she'll probably listen to this.
Yes, she will. I'm sure.
Hi, John's mom.
She'll get a kick out of that. So, I'm sorry, I'm taking up a lot of your time. I'm enjoying the conversation. I know you probably have a million things to do because you're a busy gal. You want to tell me about your Boston show, what folks can expect? I mean, I know you have a book, too. Will you have your book with you?
I will likely have at least a few copies of my book with me. Something I'm trying to figure out is how much to bring to shows because, to be honest, I never know. I have some shows where people buy tons of merch, and then I have other shows where they don't, and then I end up with a big old suitcase that I have to bring back with me. I don't know.
On the show Saturday, I have to sort out the merch thing, whether I feel like bringing merch or not.
Yeah. I mean, I have a website, AliciaWittMusic.com, and you can buy T-shirts and all kinds of other things, as well as all of the vinyl and the CDs.
Now, how many CDs do you have? I couldn't get an accurate count. It seems like you have a lot more than I thought. How many actual?
I have six of them.
Okay.
Six different releases. And then there's also a number of singles that are not on a physical copy.
Okay, that's why I
got
confused.
Pretty significant. Yeah, I've been putting out original music since 2009. When I play live shows these days, I'm honored that there are so many regulars who tend to go. They've been coming to see me as long as I've been putting out music, some of them. So they'll call out, a lot of them are songs that I haven't even recorded. Maybe it's a new song that I played for the very first time that show they attended 12 years ago. And one thing I love about these stage it live stream shows that I try to do whenever I'm home at my Casio is that they keep me limber because I've been dusting off all of these songs from my vault, as I like to call it. And then I've got all these new songs that I'm playing now as well, songs that I haven't recorded, and many of them I haven't played at live shows yet for the next album. So at my live show at City Winery Boston, it's going to be a combination of probably mostly songs that people are familiar with, because I have a feeling there will be a lot of people in attendance who might be seeing their first show of mine. And I definitely want to try to get to the songs they might have heard, and hopefully they can sing along. And then I always do an encore, which is made up of whatever tune people in the audience are longing to hear that I haven't gotten to yet, and then I create a medley of those. And if Ernest is with me, which he likely will be, Ernest, my dog, then he comes out and joins me for that encore.
That's great.
So that's one thing I know for sure, but no two shows are alike. The set list is always different. And I will say, it looks like we only have a small amount of tickets remaining.
Oh, wow.
Even now, months in advance. So if folks listening to this would like to come to my Boston show on June 8th, I highly recommend they snag those tickets now.
Which room are you playing? You playing the big room?
I am not playing the big room.
Are you playing the Haymarket
Lounge? But it's exciting
Lounge?
To think. Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
I like that place. It's such a cool place.
I have never been to City Winery Boston.
I thought that's where you played
usually
last
play.
Time. No?
No, I didn't. I don't remember where I played last time, but I do play City Winery Nashville.
Yeah, I noticed that. You do play. Yeah, you do play that a lot. I thought you had played City Winery.
Played City Winery Chicago Main Room and New York.
Oh, that's maybe why I had it in my brain that you've already played it. Yeah, it's a very cool place. We've played both rooms. My band has played both rooms there, and it's a really nice place. The Brussels sprouts are amazing.
Well, that's exciting, and I dare say they have the same Brussels sprouts here. And City Winery has recently completely revamped their menu within the last month or so, I want to say. And it's really delicious. Mm. They've got some good stuff on that menu.
Oh, yeah. They treat you very well there. We had some amazing food when we played there.
Yeah. As an artist, you always look at what the deal is in terms of what's the food situation going to be. And City Winery always comes through with that.
Nice green room, too.
I'm thrilled to be playing City Winery Boston for the first time and just delighted that it's looking like we're probably going to be sold out. Well, and also that means I might get to play the big room next time.
Yeah, I hope so. Aww. Well, I should let you go. I really appreciate you taking the time and talking, and you seem like a very cool person and very personable, and I enjoyed it, so I appreciate it.
It was lovely talking to you as well. Thank you for reaching out. I'm really glad we could make this happen.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Going about my day. Nothing's changed except I'm wide awake. Got that buzzing brain on 2 hours sleep. Can barely keep still. I'm picking up speed, running full tilt. You give me a crash free caffeine. Stuck on a kind of you. I don't wanna need you, but I also kinda do. And you know it's probably true. You're a kind of trap, make me. Oh,
Okie dokie. Thanks to Alicia Witt for being part of this episode of the Roots Report podcast. Alicia will be at City Winery in Boston on June 8th. Don't be chasing shadows. Get to citywinery.com/Boston for more info before the show is sold out. The Roots Report podcast is presented by Motif Magazine and sponsored by Rhode Island Blood Center, Mother Earth Wellness, Graysale Brewing, Trinity Brewhouse, Ballet RI, and R1 Indoor Karting. Thanks for listening.